Okay, coming to you from 4,200 feet in the hills of Oregon, it is the voice of Chi-Town, the reddest beard in the high desert, your host of the MOA broadcast, Sam Wilson. That's me. All right, we're going to get right into it today. We've got all kinds of good information. Starting with today's show, now, so far this has been a radio broadcast that we also put out as a podcast once it goes out over the radio. Starting today, we're going to have the video version available as well at our Patreon page. So if you aren't familiar with Patreon, it's basically a subscription service where you can go and pay a monthly subscription fee to access things like extra content or exclusives or things like that. So if you go to Patreon, that's Patreon, and look up Gear Convoy or Sam Wilson, the MOA broadcast, you'll find us. There you can access the video version of the broadcast as well. And we appreciate your support for that. Otherwise, the audio version will still be free for everyone. You can access that at the www.gearconvoy.com website. There's a player there. Or you can get it from Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Broadcast, or Apple Podcast, and whatever your favorite podcast supplier is, you can get it there for free. So we don't want to take away the content, but we do want to incentivize some, you know, extra support, and that also helps us to cover the time and everything of setting up the video and everything. All right, we're going to I usually do this broadcast from the sound booth. We're out in the shop today, in the knife shop, so give a little bit more ambiance and a little bit more room to move around, frankly. So the acoustics may not be quite what we're used to. We have a little bit of background noise occasionally. We got a train station or train tracks not far from here, so I'll try and cut any of that out in post, but if it remains, you'll have to just think of it as giving character to the show. All right, let's get into our first story. Now, we're going to introduce some news stories occasionally, things that I find interesting and want to share. The issue that we face today is everything has become political, and we're not going to bring politics into the MOA broadcast. So we may cover things that involve whatever current event. It may be a political event or a news event, but we're not going to inject our politics into it. Everywhere you go, every show, every podcast, almost everything has a big injection of politics into it. I don't want to do that. This is going to be a place we just do what the news used to do years ago, which is give you the information, the facts, the who, what, where, when, why, and all that, and you draw your own conclusions. So we'll just be reporting on the actual events that we happen to find interesting. So let me get a sip of this coffee here. That is some good coffee. Okay, nice and hot. We are currently being belted by snowstorms again, so the fun just continues. Let's get into our story, though. Coming to you from New York, the White House blocked an Associated Press, that's AP, an Associated Press reporter from an event in the Oval Office on Tuesday of this week after demanding the news agency alter its style on the Gulf of Mexico. This will make sense in a moment. If you haven't heard about the scandal, if you will, the kerfluffle about the Gulf of Mexico and Gulf of America, we'll get to that here. The reporter, whom the AP would not identify, tried to enter the White House event as usual Tuesday afternoon and was turned away. Later, a second AP reporter was barred from a late evening event in the White House's diplomatic reception room. Now, all this comes from before the inauguration, President Donald Trump announced plans to change the Gulf of Mexico's name to the Gulf of America, which he does have the legal right and ability to do. He signed an executive order to do so as soon as he was in office. Now, the AP said last month, 3 days before Trump's inauguration, before he made the change to call it the Gulf of America, they said that it would continue to refer to the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of Mexico, even though they stated they were aware of Trump's decision to rename it. Their reasoning was, as a global news agency that disseminates news around the world, the AP says it must ensure that place names and geography are easily recognizable to all audiences. Now, I don't know what exactly they're actually saying or really saying here, but it looks to me like this is either an ego or a pride thing or some type of battle of wills. I don't know why they would want to dig their heels in. Let's get into this. This week, Google Maps began using Gulf of America, along with Apple Maps and other leading online map providers, began referring to it as the Gulf of America, saying it had a long-standing practice of following the U.S. government's lead on such matters. As of Tuesday by early morning, both Apple and Google Maps, along with other online maps providers, had changed it to Gulf of America. So the AP refuses to, I don't even know why this would come up that often. Like, how often do you hear them refer to it? But it seemed like they're making a point of, well, we're not going to call it the Gulf of America. As a result, the White House, or Trump probably, is the one that said, okay, well, then you're not going to come in for press briefings here in the White House as long as you're referring to it as the Gulf of Mexico. So I guess those two will have their battle of wills and we'll see what happens. But since there was an executive order signed, that is the actual current and accurate name here in America. As far as what people around the world are doing, I don't know. I don't really talk to many people around the world about the Gulf of America or Gulf of Mexico. So I can't imagine it really being that big of a deal to most people. But I guess the AP wants to dig their heels in and we'll see what happens. All right. That takes care of the AP. Moving on. A Florida woman. Speaking of intelligent moves, a Florida woman was arrested this week when she made the decision to call police to report a friend had stolen her marijuana. Not only did she have marijuana with her when cops arrived, they also found that she had two active outstanding warrants. For those of you that don't see the video broadcast, this is me staring at the camera with a face of, yeah, where do these people come from? Anyway, according to the police report obtained that documented the woman's ordeal, Stewart police responded to a call about stolen property at a Best Western hotel. Let me tell you, if your story starts at the Best Western hotel, chances are it's only going to go downhill from there. During the time, let's see what happened at the Best Western, they found we won't use her name, it doesn't matter. They found the lady, or woman, whatever, who gave them the play-by-play of how the theft went down. She was, quote-unquote, hanging out with her, quote-unquote, friend Carlos, whom she had known for all of a week at the Best Western that night. During the time they hung out, she had approximately $30 worth of weed with her. After Carlos left, she looked in her container and believed about half a gram was missing. The only thing she could think to do was to call the police. The police asked her for identification, only find out she was wanted on two outstanding warrants, one for missing a court hearing and the other for not appearing to a probation violation for a DUI earlier this year. So, yeah. If someone steals your weed, apparently it's not legal for her to possess there. Do you really think calling the cops is a good idea? You know, we always hear about the Florida man. This was a Florida woman. I don't know what in the world goes on. I've spent a good amount of time in Florida, especially in the Fort Walton Beach, Pensacola areas. Absolutely beautiful. Several good steakhouses went to there. Went to a Three Dog Night reunion concert there. That was pretty interesting. I didn't really see a lot of this crazy behavior, but these are stories that pop up regularly with the Florida man and the Florida woman deal. So she was taken to the Martin County Jail and held with no bond. Well, I guess she lost the rest of her weed too. This reminds me of an episode of Cops. So for those of you that are young, you may not be aware of the show Cops. Before we had social media and TikTok and Instagram and X or Twitter and all the other, you know, different things where anybody could just put, you know, live or unfiltered, uncensored content online. The only place you could really see these wild police chases and takedowns was on a show called Cops. And when you heard that theme song, Bad Boys by Inner Circle, come on, you knew you were in for a good time because these were, you know, it was the Wild Wild West. And this is before, you know, people started getting overly sensitive to, let's just say, the use of force in police applications. So things got pretty wild and woolly sometimes. And this reminds me, sorry, I don't want my coffee to get cold. This reminds me of an episode I saw once where you see these two women in a pretty rough looking part of town. Okay. The cops show up and they go over to the first woman and she's the one that called the police. And the cop says to her, he goes, okay, you called us, what's going on? And she goes, well, I gave this lady over here $20 for something and she won't give my money back. And you can tell by the part of town that they're in and the way these folks are dressed and looking and acting and talking. You can look this up on YouTube, by the way. It's an easy clip to find. That, you know, the cop knows what's going on. And so he asks her, he goes, well, what's the money for? And she says, it could be for anything. It doesn't matter what the money's for. She goes, well, she won't give him my $20 back. And the cop asks her, he says, well, did you come down here to buy drugs? And she goes, yes, I came down to buy crack rock. So don't wait. Don't worry. It gets better. The cop says, all right, well, wait here for a minute. He goes over and talks to the other woman who, of course, immediately, you know, begins denying the story. I don't know what you're talking about. She came over disrespecting me, asking this and that. And I don't know, whatever her problem was. And the cop says, well, did you give her anything for her $20? Because the lady told the cop when she gave her the 20 bucks, she gave her what she found out later was plaster. It was supposed to be crack rock. And she gave her some plaster. So the cop says, did you give her anything? Did you sell her anything? And the lady goes, no, without missing a beat. She goes, no, I don't even sell drugs. I'm a prostitute. So that ends our foray into the news for the moment and our Florida adventures. All right. What are we here to talk about today, though? We know this is supposed to be a show about survival, about making it out alive, about getting by, about preparedness. What are we talking about? Well, one of everybody's favorite topics when it comes to the outdoors, fire. Let's go to New Hampshire's White Mountains. New Hampshire Fish and Game says a man, he didn't make it, unfortunately. We're going to leave names out of this one, too. A man, 53, was attempting a hike in Presidential Ridge Saturday when the weather deteriorated to winter-like conditions. The Massachusetts man was rescued Saturday night. Rescuers carried him over a mile up the summit of Mount Washington, where he was placed on a truck and driven down the mountain's road to a hospital. Life-saving efforts were attempted for several hours, but he suffered from severe hypothermia and was unable to be revived. Authorities tell them that the man's wife, who had received text messages from him saying he was cold and wet and couldn't continue, and that he felt he would die without a rescue. Unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. When they got to him, he was alive, but he had already suffered from such extensive damage from the cold that hypothermia wound up taking his life. So very unfortunate. So what went wrong? Number one, they knew the storm was coming in. And I don't know, it seemed like this guy was not prepared for the weather. I don't know about his clothing and other things, how well he's prepared. But the bottom line is he failed to regulate his body temperature one way or another. Either he didn't have the tools or he didn't have the ability to start a fire, because there are a lot of different causes. If you look up the number one reason or the top reasons why people die in the outdoors, frequently it comes down to falls, get a lot of people actually, in the national park system, but exposure is what gets a lot of these stories, and I look up hundreds of these things, or dozens a week, hundreds a month or a year easily. And unfortunately, there's a steady stream, a supply of them coming, because people continually go out into the wilderness and they're not equipped. And again, that's what the show is about. So he either didn't have the tools or the training to start a fire. Now, if he did have both the tools and the training, it could be that the wood or whatever it was where he was to burn, had to burn. If he was above the tree line, it would start getting difficult very quickly to find things to burn anyway. But he wasn't able to get a fire going for whatever reason. Now, that's another thing that comes into being prepared beforehand. You have to know your terrain, your area of operations, as they call it. Because as we talked about in last week or the week before, whenever I would go hiking in the Columbia River Gorge, okay, which, right, by the way, right now they are just getting hammered with a massive snowstorm. The highway, I think it's 84, is shut down, bunch of wrecks. The highway is either closed or in serious trouble right now, which is near the Multnomah Falls area. That's about 35, 45 minutes outside of the city of Portland in Oregon. But when you go hiking in that area, there is so much, because it's a temperate rainforest, there's so much moisture everywhere. if you pick up what they call deadfall, you know, branches, things off the ground, a lot of times you can take branches that are wrist thick and just snap them in half or crush them with your hand because there's so much moisture. Now, if this guy was in a mountainous area, which he was, the White Mountains of New Hampshire, clearly there's a lot of moisture, there's a lot of snow. Even if he'd had matches or other fire-starting devices, he may not have been able to get a fire going because the wood was just too damp. And if he didn't bring tinder or other things along with him to facilitate that fire, then things get even worse for him. So, sad story, but that really is the crux of the matter today. It's not just a matter of having, okay, like let's say you got a lighter. Here we go. Even if you have a lighter, this is a Bic, disposable, good tool to use in the backwoods. These are actually very reliable for the most part. You got to be careful when you get them really cold or wet. They may have issues, but usually a pack couple along and that's, you know, takes care of that. But if you had a lighter like this and you didn't have good tinder or the experience to actually get a fire going properly in wet conditions, it's not going to matter. And so, unfortunately, that gentleman lost his life. We hope the best for his family. All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to discuss fire starting methods and tools and their pros and cons and their particular applications. So, the question is, what's your favorite method for getting a fire going? What is the one thing you always have on you if you're going to be in the backwoods and you know you may need to have a fire going, whether for recreation or for an emergency? Let us know at info@gearconvoy.com. That's info@gearconvoy.com, and we'll mention you on air. We'll be back. More Make It Out Alive with Sam Wilson after this.